AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our Wednesday edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM Radio. First, I'm going to ask you to go to your telephone, invite your family members and friends to tune in here on 860 AM Radio if they live in Philadelphia in the tri-state area. And if they're on the internet, they can listen in from anywhere in the world simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Well, during the last few months, we've been broadcasting on Polish American Radio program, and which we're doing proudly once again today. I want to thank all of our sponsors, and I want to thank the many people that have been supporting our efforts. And those of you that wrote to me at michael@americanworkersradio.com, I have a few of your emails today, which we are going to talk about and give you some answers. I'm here with Joseph Evangelist, our distinguished panel member, who adds a lot of good information to the things that we're doing. I'm really proud to have him here with us. Next week, I have some special guests coming in, and we're going to look at these emails because people love to send opinions in emails, and in my travels, people let me know what they think of the broadcast, what they would like to hear, and they want to hear more about what are we going to do to get people together to support America's businesses right now. And through this campaign, I'm proud to say we've gathered millions of people because we have about 20 radio stations that rebroadcast the commentaries on Saturdays and on Sundays, and there are more and more people talking about this effort, printing out our little brochures that we have on the front page of American Workers Need You and on American Workers Radio, and they are spreading the word because people are discouraged. I'm here with Joseph Evangelist, our consumer advocate. Joe, anything special happening this week that you'd like to start us off with?
Well, I think the interesting thing was the trade agreement information that was leaked this morning, and the fact that the Obama administration is actually trying to, in my opinion, prop up corporate profits through patent stuff. And one of the examples is they're looking at the UN is opposed to this. But the interesting thing about it is when you look at actually what the costs are and you look back on the healthcare bill. Under the healthcare bill, if you remember, the administration gave up the ability to negotiate on drug prices based on volume.
Insanity. I don't understand. But it's, every state, first of all, Pennsylvania, let me just focus on Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania, the PACE program, they negotiate for prices. Why can't every state in the union be doing that?
Well, it's actually even worse than that. Is the catch that you have with this is, under UN policy, countries that have massive endemic epidemics are able to basically violate patent law, and so that they can provide the services. And the example that keeps coming out is the AIDS drugs. And this is an example because there are generics that are offered overseas. But the one that they've been hawking on is Altripa by Gilead. Altripa came out in 2006, and it was just under $14,000 wholesale for a year's supply. When it became popular, it's now over $20,000 a year in the United States. But the thing that gets me is when in the countries that are offering the generic version, it costs $200 a year.
Okay, $200 as opposed to $14,000.
$20,000 now.
Now, where does that make sense at?
Well, here's the problem that we have here is that, in my opinion, is if the government wants to provide health care, why would the government providing health care pay $20,000 when they can say, if it's on the government health care, we're going to pay maybe not $200, maybe $500. But we're going to offer generic drugs at the government level. So if you are on a government program and you're receiving your health care through government program, we're going to pay, you know, generic or higher than generic. I mean, we're talking about a factor of 100. You can give the drug to 100 people at the generic cost for what it costs for one person today.
Unbelievable.
So and this is across the whole piece. So what you have here is you have lots and lots of money being spent that's just propping up corporate profits.
And it's not trickling down to the everyday worker. The everyday worker is committing suicide to pay those the bills, as well as the corporations that they're working for are killing themselves to pay these medical expenses. When government, through the new healthcare system, I believed that they were going to work to bring down the cost of drugs, number one. They were going to work to make sure that every drug had a generic, and then you made the decision if you want a regular generic or you want the brand name. But it seems that everything has just gone off the, as we discussed last week. Many of the companies tell me that they're not hiring people because they cannot get involved with providing health care. They simply can't do it.
Well, it's a very expensive piece. I mean, I run my own small business, and nobody wants to provide health care at a small business level. And I think you're going to see caps on the size of corporations. It used to be, you know, manufacturing side, you wanted to keep your business small so that you wouldn't attract the unions coming in to lobby to make your outfit a union shop. Now I think you're going to see that people are going to try and stay under the limit to be exempt from the healthcare law.
I see the point.
So what's going to happen is, you know, when 2014 comes and you're going to be required to provide health care for everybody if you have more than 50 people. If you have 70 people, the solution is to fire 25 of them to stay under the limit. Because think about the cost. And this is the problem that the government has across the things. Let's take two examples. We'll take the health care cost and we'll take welfare. Two diametrically opposed pieces, but it's the same underlying problem that the government has. In health care costs, if you have under 49, you don't have to offer health care as an employer. So you give people money. You could give them a stipend to buy their own, whatever you want to do. At the 51st person, you now have to offer health care for all 50 through a group.
And that starts as of 14.
As of 2014, I believe it is. So the problem becomes is that 51st employee, if you're paying what I'm paying for health care per month for a family plan, you're looking at $600,000 a year for the 50 employees.
It can't happen.
So, you know, that's the end of it. That 51st employee brings along with them this huge piece. On the welfare side, there was an article the other day about up in North Jersey in very rich neighborhoods. I mean, these are million-dollar homes. Families are going on welfare. And the guy was making $130,000 a year. Then he took a job making $10 an hour, and he qualified for food stamps. His wife took a part-time job making $9 an hour. Now, he got a new job making $15 an hour, and he crossed that threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And once he crossed the threshold, he gets no more food stamps. And this is the problem that you have in everything in the government is, you know, you want people to move from being on unemployment, being on welfare over. But when they cross that line, they're worse off.
The main thing that we discussed over the last month or so is the fact that we have got to get the jobs back so there is no longer any need for extended welfare. Those people that are able to work, able-bodied, ready to go, ready to tone up their skills, are able to be placed in the workforce. The we've allowed programs to grow to such a important level to government that all they do is concern themselves is, what are they going to do to give more and more and more? Working in social services in the communities that I serve, we don't look to give more and more and more. We look to keep people self-sufficient, and how are they going to continue to help themselves? That's what we're missing right now in the country. A lot of what happened to us is because we lost our trip, our road. We're on a trip which we have no idea where we're going. It's like anybody else. If you're going to a trip to Florida, you look at the maps, you have an idea that where you're going, what, how long you're going to be there, what hotels are along the way. Our government's not providing any of that to us at this point. And what's really frustrating is here we are 5 months away from an election, and neither candidate is telling me what they're going to do to bring those jobs back. As I look at the emails and as I speak to people in my travels, they have more common sense than the people who are looking to be our leaders. They're saying, well, why can't we do something to bring back? In fact, here is one of the emails I received, and we'll just try to put as little as of it as I can. Number one, what five things could you list, Joseph, that you would want to do if you were in a major leadership position to bring companies to your local area? In other words, to Philadelphia, New Jersey, Southampton, Virginia, wherever. What five things would you say, these are the very first things we have got to do to bring those companies back?
Well, a few of the things that you have to watch is a lot of these companies, they get incentives to come in, but it takes years to negotiate the
Why tax. Can't the incentive be done quickly?
Well, it's a lot of it is you know, they're trying to figure out what they're going to do, how they're going to pay, how they're going to optimize it. And a lot of it becomes a cost-benefit analysis that the township has to do against what they're going to get in, say, sales tax against what's in the other area, or what they're going to get in local taxes, et cetera.
Okay, now those local taxes that you're talking about, how do we justify what those taxes are really being used for? As I said in a past interview with someone, why are we riding down streets and they're all broken up? What would you do to get people to work with the companies from the townships to make sure that those companies located there? What would you offer them?
Well, actually, I think there's a more pressing piece that you have to have, and that you brought up with why are the streets so bad, is the problem is we're not directing stimulus where it should be.
Not only the stimulus, this should be every day of the week.
But it doesn't matter. Is
the stimulus was a one-time deal and forgotten.
But it's not a one-time deal, because if there's an argument right now over Mitt Romney's debate on whether or not the federal government pays for firefighters, teachers, and all. And yes, they don't directly pay, but they give money to the states that ultimately trickles down into these areas. The problem that we have here is the stimulus was the blatant continuation of the historical inertia. In the stimulus, rather than fix the roads, repair the schools, and invest the money in capital expenditures that employed new people, we took the money and we gave it as salary increases.
I know,
but
here's my point. We have the stimulus now in the last few years. I'm riding on those same roads, and they're broken up.
Right.
Whether it's Market Street, Chestnut Street, Walnut Street, they're still broken up.
But look at the city of Philadelphia. We just approved a school district budget that's almost $300 million over budget, and the solution to the problem for the approval was the state will provide money to it, and we're going to increase the real estate taxes again. That's the plan. But here's the problem is we've approved a budget with a deficit that gives everybody their raises and everything else that's needed. We're shutting 65 schools.
First of all, wait. There should be no raises in this economy for anybody. Just as gas started to go down, I'd like to see all the other prices start to be reduced as well. It can continue. When we come back, I want to talk about the five things that you would recommend that we do to try to get some of these businesses back. We can use Philadelphia as a place. And when Larkin Conley gets back here from his trip, we'll ask him about that as well. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thanks for tuning in. Call around and invite others to tune in here on 860 AM radio or on the internet. Go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
For all of your banking needs, call on Washington Savings Bank, which offers checking and savings accounts, IRAs, CDs, home mortgages, and home equity loans, along with a host of other services at its five offices at 2701 East Allegheny Avenue in Port Richmond, 2548 East Lehigh Avenue in Fishtown, and in the Northeast at 2900 Comley Road, 10663 Busselton Avenue, and 8729 Frankfort Avenue. Banking hours at all offices of Washington Savings Bank are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Friday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. The Port Richmond Kazimierzwielki branch at Edgemont and Allegheny Avenue is also open on Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. For more information about the many services provided by Washington Savings Bank, call the main number in Philadelphia at area code 215-698-9400. That's area code 215-698-9400. Or visit a Washington Savings Bank near you.
After a long day of play, give your kids what they really want. Great-tasting snacks and meals from Giorgio. Giorgio's delicious mozzarella sticks, toasted American cheese sticks, and macaroni cheese triangles will satisfy even your pickiest eater. Since 1928, Giorgio has stood for quality and nutrition, so you can count on them for great taste and convenient snacks and appetizers. Look for these great Giorgio products and more in your grocer's freezer, and for recipe ideas, log on to GiorgioFoods.com.
The office of Leon Mankoski, attorney at law, is located at 2624 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia. His office is open Monday through Friday from 9 in the morning till 5 in the evening, and he does have additional evening hours on Tuesdays. For more information or an appointment, call Leon Mankoski, attorney at law, at 215-739-8521. That's 215-739-8521. Welcome back to American Workers Radio, to our Wednesday edition. I'm here with Joseph Evangelist, our consumer advocate, and I always invite you to let your family and friends know about our broadcast, that they can listen here live, or they can tune in anytime by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Anytime link. We're back here discussing one of the emails I received. What five things could be suggested to get local developers to bring back industries in the area? When I say developers, that means somebody who's going to help the industrial site get started. And when I say industrial site, I don't only mean manufacturing, because every industry needs office people, management, salespeople, delivery people. There's a dozen and one jobs that are created around every industry. One of the things we discussed is an enterprise zone in every possible, in every zip code in the USA. Why can't there be an enterprise zone where people can know that jobs are being developed within their own community, as it was 60, 70 years ago? Maybe there won't be those big factories or whatever that we were used to seeing, but why can't we have enterprise zones where developers go in and begin to make industry come alive by making the buildings possible? Next is to get people interested in restoring what they're making to locate in those enterprise zones. And we're talking also about tax abatements. Why can't a company have a 10-year tax abatement for coming and locating in an enterprise zone? Which, if you are in a certain enterprise zone now, that is possible. But it should be for every imaginable zip code in every city and every state. What do you think?
Well, the hard part of that is actually getting the buildings up to code. I mean, for years, none of these buildings were maintained. So it may cost you $500,000 to get a workable space. I mean, we see that when they have the Naval Yard, the arsenal's been developed. But I mean, a lot of these places, the initial outlay is so extensive that it's not going to be profitable. Where we're having a problem is overseas, the governments of China and some of the other places are building the factories. The facilities are being subsidized by the government in order to put their workers to work. And in the United States, it doesn't work that way. Is basically what happens is the government says, yeah, we'll give you a really nice lease on this piece of land here, and you can hire union labor. And if you're in Philadelphia, it's going to be union labor, and you're going to pay top dollar to renovate something that we have slated to knock down.
You know, as I ride to various places, especially going to Washington sometimes, I look along the railroad tracks and I see many well-maintained buildings that are now vacant. Now, some of those factories just picked up and moved overseas, and that is a problem. However, there are many very well-maintained buildings that could be used. So I would like to see the real estate companies get together and feature the buildings that are ready to be used immediately and then try to attract people in there. But before a person is going to want to come in, they're also going to want to know, well, am I going to be taxed to death for coming back to America, for staying in America? These are the kinds of issues that have to be addressed. We're hearing on TV how they want to raise this to give more extension of this particular program. We should stop already and look what's happening around us. When does all this stop? When do we stop worrying about someone else and worry about ourselves first? Where are we going? Where is our tax base going? Where is our future going? Where is our educational system going? I mean, we're educating kids right now in many of our top universities who are then going back to their countries of origin, and America's, you know, losing all that talent all at once. We have to do something to focus on the USA. So our two top discussion pieces were an enterprise zone in every zip code of the USA possible. 10-year tax abatement. I can't imagine why every city and every state would not want to have a zone that they know jobs are going to be located. They're going to get taxes regardless. Maybe they wouldn't get it here in this situation on the property tax, but they'll get it from employment taxes and knowing that people in the communities are being employed and able to pay their taxes, spend money in their communities, and so forth and so on. It's a cycle that has to change. We did this in this country for 100 years with great success. It's only been about 30 years that we've fallen down to this point. And that's why this campaign is to wake people up and get them to look forward again to see what are we going to do to help ourselves. We see now that government is not helping us. So we have to help ourselves. How do we do that? First of all, it's a very simple process. Go out of our way to support the products that are made here first. And when other companies see that the American people are going out of their way to buy what's made in the USA, that'll give them more confidence to come and say, well, I'll locate in the USA because at least I know the customer base is there. Maybe the people are going to have to pay a few bucks extra, but they won't mind paying it because they know that they're supporting themselves, their sons, their daughters, their neighbors. Something is coming for the good by supporting products made in the USA. And I'm never against imported products, but I am against where there's no balance, no 50-50 balance between the products. The third thing that most discouraging is that when employers say that they can't find skilled people, this is the biggest tragedy that we're suffering from in America. How can that possibly be, Joe?
Well, a lot of the problem is there's two areas that you have. Is one, educationally, I think we're not doing the children any favors. I mean, I see the teachers, they do their best, but I mean, in many cases, the parents have no interest in actually taking up the role. On the way down here today, I got two phone calls from the Automated School District program asking me if I would like to set up an appointment for my children to have free dental visits towards the end of June. Because, you know, it's very hard for children when they have toothaches in school to focus. So now we have them looking at whether or not they need dental. Do they, the school district feeds them breakfast. The school district feeds them lunch. And the parents are now screaming in some cases that they want the school district to keep the kids until like 6 and 7 o'clock and do homework. And they don't, there shouldn't be any homework. And I mean, the fact is it's bad enough now that when you're actually in the classrooms, they get a thing called a smart board. And rather than the children reading a book, they put in a tape and the children are supposed to follow the book while somebody else reads, while the teacher's in the back of the room. I mean, the fact is unfortunately the school system is becoming a large babysitting area and we're not pushing.
But as you're speaking, it brings back to one of the points I've mentioned many times. Government is now becoming the nanny of too many people. Instead of government encouraging us to increase job skills, be or stand on your own, they seem to want to take over every little thing in your life. So you don't have to think on your own because government is already providing that. In other words, if the child has a toothache, the parent doesn't have to be that involved because the school is overly concerned about kids not paying attention because they have a toothache. The first thing I would do if a child had a toothache, and if I was poor and couldn't afford it, I would try to find resources on my own where I could have this issue resolved. Not to be getting robocalls from a school district from in any part of the country telling me that the kids have problems focusing and all. We're creating jobs in the public sector, not in the private sector. Is everything that we're discussing for weeks, the public sector is not being told we have to scale this down and let the private sector take over these things. Private sector is hurting because the public sector is taking the funds from the taxes, administering our lives, which is the worst of all, and then the public sector can't compete because the private sector.
Well, there's a saying in politics, is, you know, a government that's big enough to give you everything is big enough to take it away.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The problem that I have with it is the government has proven very inefficient at collecting what it's supposed to. I mean, look at the city real estate tax that they want to put up. And they say, oh, we need to increase the taxes again for the third time, like 3 years in a row.
Has anybody justified why they have to increase the taxes?
Well, because the school district has another deficit. But here's the one that gets me.
But this is happening all over the country, not just in Philadelphia.
Well, yes, but the reason is because there's no accountability. But here's the problem that I have is the city of Philadelphia has almost $500 million in outstanding back real estate taxes. There's almost $1 billion in outstanding back bail bonds, and the city isn't collecting any of it. So basically what it is we raised the taxes last year, and a percentage of our people actually paid the increase. So we have a choice of collecting from the people who didn't pay, or we can raise the taxes on the people who pay every year.
So you're saying we have more than $1 billion worth of money that could be collected,
yes,
and should be collected.
See,
and the taxpayer should not be tackled at all at this time.
No, in my opinion, basically, I said last week is that the unions and the union-run sectors, like the educational sector, have the ability to raise taxes. The school district came in with a budget that, from what I can tell, doesn't make any sense. You know, the school that my children go to, the budgets went from $4.5 million to $7.2 million in 5 years. I do know that, you know, the state of Pennsylvania and the stimulus package threw lots of money in, and they put all the money into salaries, and now they have high salaries. You know, the average teacher counts for $91,000 at the school. There's a principal and two vice principals. They're $130,000 apiece. You know, when you start looking at these numbers, it's all personnel costs. So the question comes in is, do we continue to extort money out of the paying people in order to cover the people who aren't paying, or do we just take the money from the people there or take their houses?
Well, city council's addressing this tax issue in Philadelphia, as are councils all over the country. But I think that before they raise one penny in any tax in the future, they have to look at what is owed them and how they can be more efficient. We'll get back to our five ideas from this email of how we're going to help companies relocate and give our suggestions to local and national elected leaders to have it come about. We'll be back in a few moments. Thanks.
Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio, attorney at law, is available to handle your legal matters. She's part of the well-known firm Bennett, Bricklin, and Salzburg, and works in all areas of the law, including immigration, personal injury, compensation, and real estate. Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio is fluent in both English and Polish, and welcomes clients to contact her from throughout the Philadelphia area and New Jersey. If you need legal assistance, call Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio at area code 215-423-4824. That's area code 215-423-4824.
Dr. Eva Machak has two dental offices in Philadelphia to serve you. One at 3084 Armingo Avenue in Port Richmond, another at 4250 Richmond Street in the Bridesburg section. Dr. Eva Machak will provide you with quality dental care at affordable prices. For more information or an appointment, call Dr. Eva Machak at area code 215-739-2787. That's 215-739-2787. Dr. Machak speaks both English and Polish.
The Polish National Alliance, America's largest ethnic fraternal life insurance and investment organization, encourages you to open a PNA annuity. Your deposits are tax deferred. You can open the account with $500 and then make future deposits in any amount in your tax-deferred annuity. For more information about PNA annuities, IRAs, and life insurance programs, call the Polish National Alliance at their toll-free number 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723. And complete details will be sent to you from the national office. When you call, you can also request that a local PNA representative contact you directly with further details about PNA annuities, IRAs, and their many insurance programs. Call the Polish National Alliance at 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723.
Welcome back to another edition of American Workers Radio. I'm here with Joseph Evangelist, our very well-known community activist and our consumer advocate. And we were discussing many ways to get jobs here in the USA, but we're mainly discussing how and why jobs left the USA and why jobs don't come back that easily, because we don't have skilled workers. We don't have elected officials offering plans to bring those jobs back. They're sitting around being concerned about how to tax to keep up the systems and the programs that are in place right now, rather than finding ways to get people employed and get them the able-bodied people off the program so that they would be able to be part of the workforce, pay into the taxes, be healthier about themselves as a working person. Now, we also were discussing a few weeks ago when Larkin Connolly was here, where do people go if they wanted to open a business? And he suggested that when he comes back from his trip, that we bring on a few people to discuss that. And I'm looking forward to that very much. I'd like to know, where would someone in New Jersey, in New York, or Virginia, or in Pennsylvania go to have easy access to open a new business so that they could employ a few people, start with small and hopefully to grow big? Right now, I looked up on the internet and I don't see any national site that brings people together. In other words, I should be able to go and say, opening a business, great suggestions on how to open a business to bring people in your community to support the products that you're offering. And I learned this from suggestions that I received from the National Small Business Weekend effort that we were able to put together. Some of the smaller businesses were very grateful that we were promoting the idea of having local people support local businesses. In the process, they said that people are coming around, and through the recession, people are starting to talk more to each other and participate more with local stuff and help one another in every way that they can. But if we wanted to fill some of those empty buildings, if we wanted to get more people into local stores and malls, whatever, where is the site that I go to know what all the are the pros and cons of opening a business in Philly or New York or wherever? Is there such a site that you know of?
Not that I'm familiar of. I mean, I live in Philadelphia, and it was hard enough for me to actually register my business in Philadelphia. And the city of Philadelphia actually pretty much messed up my application and my tax issues, and then tried to actually fine me after sending me a letter that said I wasn't supposed to remit the stuff. It's really a
so it's a circus. So there's nothing really being done that I could find that helps someone to understand all of the pros and cons and the from A to Z what is going to be required of them to run a business successfully and be part of the great mosaic of America's business network.
Well, there's a lot of patronage in the system. I went down to the city office to get a license piece, and there's actually people who are like paid to stand in line for others. That's how inefficient.
Oh, I did hear about that.
I mean, you can actually go into the place and wait for 4 or 5 hours for somebody to actually look at your application. I mean, you have to be there before they open in order to get out by like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And this is because I'm trying to register to pay my taxes. The fact is if I didn't live in Philadelphia, I would never start a business in Philadelphia. If I was in Philadelphia, I wouldn't do business here.
Philly, it's all over.
But the tax structure in Philly is,
yeah, I understand,
very, very bad. I mean, you have gross revenues tax. Then you have the net
business privilege.
The business privilege tax. And I love the
occupancy tax.
It's
unbelievable. Let's just tax ourselves to death. Take all those dollars and give it to somebody else so that they could sit around and just, you know, sit back and not gain any skills or do any work.
Well, it's actually better is in the city of Philadelphia, you actually have to pay the estimated taxes forward for the business.
But what I want to know, who instituted that? What year was that done? What moon did these people sit on for that long that they became brain dead? You don't do that. You encourage people to open a business. You encourage people, not discourage them.
Well, actually, you have to think about it. Is the goal of the city is, you always say that you don't want to be paying extra taxes. You don't want a refund from the government because you're basically floating them a free loan. in Philadelphia with the business privilege tax, the way the estimated is,
they want the money up front.
You have to float them a loan for the entire year.
Well, suppose, here's a question about that. Suppose you're in business and you pay up front for the tax, and you go out of business a month later. So you then have to fight to get your money back.
No, you have to wait till the following year to file that. So then following April 15th, you say that your business terminated and you can ask for your
refund.
From
what I remember about that, that was instituted for a two-year period. And that was instituted to help them get money back into the coffer to stay alive. But it, like anything else, once it's instituted, people have short memories and they just go forward and forget about it. These are the kinds of things that we're adding together. Today we discussed we need more enterprise zones. If I propose this to city council in Philly or anywhere else, I wonder how many of them would bite at it. How many of them would say, ooh, we're going to have to reduce taxes? Or would they say, yes, we want to promote this because we will be helping to employ more people in our communities?
But you have to recognize where the city, where I think the problem with the city is. The city is inefficient at collecting taxes. So,
well, just by the $1 billion you mentioned earlier, I want to see where the $1 billion going to come from. Why would they even be discussing new taxes when there's $1 billion in outstanding
taxes?
Because
here's the catch is, let's say that you have a new business area and there's, 1,000 people employed. From the city standpoint, it's much easier to take it out of the corporation that's employing the 1,000 people, make them collect the money, make them pay the union dues, make them handle it, let the corporation handle all this stuff and hand it over to the city, than it is for the city to get money out of the 1,000 people who live here. So the problem is from a business standpoint, and my particular thing is, a lot of the policy here is the government wants to be able to say, we have one person who's going to do this and we'll deal with the fewest people. So basically it's minimizing their work. So basically, they want to get the corporation to throw as much money their way as they can up front. But the catch is when I had 1 year, is I had a good year, and at one point I owed the city close to $10,000 up front. Well, guess what? Once I gave the city my $10,000 in April, I had no money left, which meant that if we needed money to see the project or something else, we had to step it down because the money was already gone. The city had it. And there's no way to get that back until the following year.
I'd like to bring in a member of the city's small business administration or some whatever the group is called. I'd like to talk to them about that because I do remember that where that was supposed to be a short-term solution where the city needed money and there was something with the PICA board or something, asked that to happen for a two-year period and then everything would go back. From what I'm hearing is as soon as you send in your first tax return, your second has to be sent in with an estimated tax for the following year?
Yes.
Well, that's insane. Suppose you go out of business a month later.
Well, you'll get the money. You'll get it back the following year. But here's the one.
Well, why should you wait a whole year when you paid up front?
Well, that's the way that the city works. But the other side of it is, the city at times will actually attempt to charge you interest on your estimated tax payments. You didn't prepay it early enough, so now they want to charge you interest on the stuff that you haven't had to pay yet.
Well, Joseph, oh yeah, man, I'll tell you, this is unbelievable today. You know, I'm getting an education. I'm glad our listeners are getting an education. And I'm glad that we're able to have this rebroadcast that anybody can tune in. I know that a few people have told me that they've took certain parts of the program and emailed it to someone because I was attacking national elected leaders or whatever. And I said, well, what are they doing for us? All they're doing is telling us how they're going to tax us instead of how they're going to save us, save our jobs, bring our businesses back to life, stop all of the industries from moving overseas. And then the second part of my anger fest with the people is, why haven't they been going to the stores more and speaking up? It seems everybody just sits back and says, well, this is the way it is. It can't continue this way. To all of our listeners, this week I'm asking you to go out of your way and do your best to make sure you speak up about the Buy American Made campaign. And I do want to thank people like Diane Sawyer and David Muir and many of the radio stations, all the blogs and all that are speaking up and spreading our word. We can't continue to allow this. I know I'm only one little voice. Joe is a little voice. But all of you listening, all of you that get our emails, and we send out big thousands of them, I want you to make sure you continue to spread the word, because we are making a dent in the armor of the bull that's been surrounding us for a long, long time. We'll be back in a few moments.
The office of Dr. Vojimir Zinn and Everest Dental, located at 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, provides quality service at affordable prices. For a full range of dental services, from general care to implants, veneers, and many other procedures, contact Everest Dental for an appointment at area code 215-671-0188. From the moment you enter the office of Dr. Vojimir Zinn of Everest Dental, you will witness the latest technology in all areas of dental services. The Everest Dental offices accept all major insurances. Dr. Zinn speaks English and Polish and welcomes you to call Everest Dental, 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, at area code 215-671-0188. That's area code 215-671-0188.
The law firm of Dominic Rostovsky is located on the 30th floor of 1818 Market Street in Philadelphia. Whatever your legal needs are, contact the Rostovsky Law Firm at area code 215-913-6090. That's 215-913-6090. You can also visit the law firm of Dominic Rostovsky on the internet at rostovsky.com. Dominic Rostovsky, attorney at law, is available to assist you in the English and Polish language. The next portion of our broadcast today is being presented by the Polish Eagle Sports Club at 3157 East Thompson Street in Port Richmond, Philadelphia. For your weddings and special events, call the Polish Eagle Sports Club at 215-423-0800. And by Steam My Carpets, which serves commercial and residential properties in the Philadelphia area. Contact Jay Grzeczynski at 1-877-778-3263 or visit steammycarpets.com. Welcome back to another segment of American Workers Radio, where we are discussing today ways to attract businesses, to make it a little easier for businesses to relocate in local communities and, of course, and then employ local residents and, bring life back to our communities. Some of the suggestions we discussed was local enterprise zones, which means that a company would be able to locate in an area where there are several companies operating, and they would then get a tax credit because they are employing new people. Job training is a very big issue. It's a real concern when you hear on the news that employers are putting out job notices that they are looking for people, and there's not enough skilled people in the USA that are responding. The next thing is that was suggested is competitive healthcare costs that would make a company know that they're not going to be strangled by all these new initiatives that have to be obeyed. There's also a very good suggestion we discussed today, and that is how do we get people to get together to know where to go if they're looking to operate a new business, open a new business, there's no real national center for them to do that. Not that I could find that's really gave me good ideas as to what to do and how to do it and what's the benefit and what are the tax issues. Do I need an accountant? And, you know, what? Where do I file if I live in a particular situation or particular city? Where would I go if I was in Philadelphia, in New Jersey, in New York? Where do I go? What is the office I go to? I'd like to see if there is a national site, which I haven't been able to find. And the fifth suggestion is people have to support their local businesses because that adds, you know, quality to the community. Businesses are able to employ local people. They're able to upkeep their properties and be there as a service to the people. Also, we have to support the businesses that are manufacturing here in the USA so that they'll bring back more employees and to be able to answer the supply and demand of the people who are consumers. When I go into a store and I do a lot of traveling around to speak with people, I do look at the racks. And in many cases, I say to people, what do you have American made? And some of them look at me like I have 40 heads on my head, like what's made in America anymore? Well, that's really discouraging. And then I speak to the people, the customers, and the customers say to me, it is very discouraging. How are we going to turn this around? I need that particular shirt today. And there's no American made shirt on the shelf, but I need that shirt today. The purpose of today's broadcast was to help us to think about ways that we can encourage businesses to come back here. Could our t-shirt people and all expand from where they are now to make, you know, a few more sites? Could maybe some of the stores franchise that are manufacturing to make clothing or whatever in other states and cities to, so that more people can be employed? We'll save gas, not moving the items back and forth, and we'll have smaller industrial facilities, smaller manufacturing places that would be able to work more regionally. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think there's, that could work, but I think that we have a bigger issue with the transition plan. Is the goal is to take people who are currently on the entitlement programs or unemployed and retrain them. And as we've discussed several times, is the problem is when you cross the threshold, you lose your government benefits. So let's take a scenario that I am an untrained worker and I need to go back into a manufacturing scene and a company is going to hire me. So today I'm on all the programs that I'm eligible for. I have health care coverage, I have food stamps, I have everything that I can get. So I get a job and the job pays, for an apprenticeship, pays $22,000 a year. And unfortunately, the $22,000 a year job, now that I'm employed, doesn't qualify for all the programs that I was on before. So I now have to pay for my own healthcare, I have to pay for my own food, I have to pay for everything else. And in the grand scheme of thing, I'm actually worse off. What you call the working poor, because you get into a job, but the job does not pay enough to actually offset what you were getting from the government services. Now the problem is you go to the employer and say, well, you know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, I need $30,000 a year in order to get what I get with the government services. But the problem is companies don't want to pay $30,000 a year for untrained labor. You, at least not while you're trying to train them, because you're going to be paying additional money and you're going in it. And you're going to be paying for their training, loss of productivity. So the catch that comes in is there has to be a transition period in here. This falling off a cliff of you don't qualify anymore is a problem, because the solution to the problem is don't take the job.
Right. Well, we have to turn that around, where the solution to the problem is you get the skill training that is then going to be benefited or a tax deduction to your new employer. And we slowly get the people back into the job that they are best qualified to do.
Well, the catch is also cultural. I mean, we can blame the government for this, but culturally, there is a mentality, and I see it when I take my kids to the park and everything else, there is a mentality that if I can sit at home and do nothing, or I can work and have the same amount of money, that there is a glory in sitting at home. I mean, I listen to these people on how they trade things, on how to qualify for stuff, where to go, which lawyers to contact in order to get approved for disability, even if you're not disabled. You know, these guys are the best. They'll keep going through the system until you qualify. I mean, when you have an environment that breeds this, you can understand why there are people who say, you know, just cut the entitlement programs and force people back into the system.
Well, that's a very good suggestion. Cut the entitlements. But in cutting the entitlements, we also have to have jobs available for the people to go into, which is where our major problem is. When you have, say, in clothing, when you have 95% of the clothing that all of us are wearing right now made outside of this country, this is a problem. In the clothing industry alone, they say that you could bring back 15 to 18 million jobs. That's a nice chunk of jobs. And with new technologies, there's no excuse whatsoever for companies not to strive to come back to the USA. And some companies are, but our government, our local government, state government, and national government has to make it very easy for them to return back. Not to shake their hands and say, oh boy, more companies, more ways to tax, and more ways to give away. Those days are over.
But I would bet that I could put a facility here that would bring 100,000 jobs, and I would not get people to hear. And this is because of my observations of people.
Of the entitlements. Too many ways to game the system.
There are mothers who put their kids in government-subsidized daycare. They pay $5 a day for their children to be in child care. The government picks up the rest. And I ask the people, well, what do you do during the day? I sit at home and watch TV so I don't have to take care of my kid.
I hear it all the time. I know, I see it. As I go around and people say to me, I've been unemployed for 5 years and I'm on these programs and all. I said, well, have you tried? Yeah, but you know, it's really tough out there getting a job and all. That is what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm trying to turn around. We've got to convince our national leaders. And I am disappointed, as I said earlier, that the national candidates for president are not giving us a map to what they would like to see done, what they would like to do to bring jobs here to the USA, and then put some statistics on it. By the first 6 months, we're going to have this many jobs. I'm going to have corporations come in for a seminar where we'll discuss how we can bring those jobs back to the USA and make it more profitable for you to be here than there. That's the bottom line. And with that, I am going to have to wind down our broadcast for today. Remember, Barbara Ilnitska will be back in the Polish language tomorrow. I would like to note that this coming week, on the 19th, we have two nights at the Citizens Bank Park. Tuesday night is Irish American Night at Citizens Bank Park. And Thursday night is Polish American Night at the Phillies. That's Thursday, June the 21st, the 7:05 game, Phillies versus the Colorado Rockies. And of course, the Polish are going to come and give them great good luck. Now, we're going to have the Polish American String Band entertaining prior to the game. And at the fifth inning, the PKM Polish folk dancers will be dancing. They'll be walking around the park during the game. You can take pictures with them and enjoy. The Fanatics going to get involved. And when you call for tickets, when you call, it's 215-463-5000. Ask for Vanessa and make sure you let her know that you're calling about Polish American Night. Our code is PAN. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be looking forward to hearing from you. You can email me by going to michael@AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Thanks, Joseph Evangelist, our consumer advocate. Thanks, Henry Chaplinsky. And also thanks to Tim Hollerin, another engineer, for all of your help today. I hope you enjoyed what we had to say. More and more good things are going to happen in the future. Spread the word, buy American, and check us out on the internet, and spread the word by emailing our internet site to your family members and friends. David Zenya.